You are listening to the Grief Gang podcast, hosted by Amber Jeffrey, the podcast dedicated to having difficult and layered conversations on grief and loss through my own personal reflections on grief, inspirational guest appearances, and contributions from the incredible community. You will find an array of real, authentic, moving, and at most times humorous accounts of what it's really like to live with grief. It's not always doom and gloom, I promise you that. We know how to have fun whilst talking about the heavy stuff around here. So, welcome to the gang, the one you never asked to be a part of. Well, Poppy, welcome to the Grief Gang podcast. I am so elated to have you on here. After a few technical blips, we have found ourselves here and we are rocking and rolling. I, of course, am going to get into how I came to know you and your work at Poppy's, getting all tongue twisted there, because I have a personal connection with your incredible work. But before we get into that, Poppy, and I just want to say, for one, it might sound weird, it's just so nice just to say the name Poppy. It really is. And so I'll let you take it away, please, Poppy, and tell the listeners who you are and what it is, the work that you do, and how you found yourself in it.
Thanks so much for having me. You can probably tell from my smile how thrilled I am to be here with you. My name is Poppy Mardle, and 12 years ago I founded Poppy's, and we are a funeral directors. We serve people across Greater London and sometimes beyond. And our mission is to bring outstanding care for our living and our dead clients in a sector that is quite famous for a lack of regulation and sometimes kind of poor standards of care. So whether that be sort of manipulative sales techniques for grieving people, or kind of inflexibility of sort of packages, all the way through to, you know, not caring for people who've died very well in the mortuary. We want to kind of set a new standard for what death care looks and feels like in our society. And I got into that through a very twisty tale, which I probably won't go into too much detail because it's a full day tale. But I didn't have a bad experience of a funeral, which I think some people expect. You know, it didn't come from a kind of bad experience. For me, it was more getting to my late 20s and like lots of people feeling like my life's good, but I haven't found my purpose and I want to and I believe it's out there. And I got sick. So I got typhoid. I was traveling and I got typhoid.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I was very ill for a few weeks, and then I was just not very well for like 9 months. And I think what that did, obviously it was a bit brutal at the time, but it kind of paused my life such that I think you go back a bit to ground zero. And I think, you know, it's really interesting working with death and grief, because you start to see the kind of parallels between, you know, chronic illness and grief and crisis and mental health stuff, you know, which can be very hard. But one of the upsides of those experiences is they sometimes yank you off a track, which might not have been serving you. So I was thinking about what I wanted to do, and I wanted to get involved in something democratic. Like I used to work at Sotheby's Auction House. It was incredible fun, but I was working for very wealthy people, and lots of them were lovely, but it didn't really sit right with me or my upbringing. And death jumped out at me. So there were three exposés on TV in 2012, which was when I was recovering. Channel 4's Dispatches and ITV's Exposure showing some of these like really, really poor standards in the sector. And I just was filled with rage. You know, it felt like this is such a vulnerable moment for people. We live in a society where people don't think about death and dying, and they're kind of landing in the jaws of sharks who are not always, but sometimes really manipulating this moment at great financial and emotional cost. And I also felt like in a sector that's sort of known for businesses being around since like the 17th century, like these guys don't seem to have learned very much. You know, I haven't been in business for 250 years, but I can see that's not what you need when someone dies. I was a Samaritan as well. I volunteered as a Samaritan, and I volunteered at my local hospice. So I think probably those experiences gave me some of what I needed in order to get into this work. And I launched Poppies in 2012 from scratch, with no investment, and have grown from there. So we now look after about 400 families a year, based in Tooting, second site in East Sheen. But our mission is really quite ambitious. It's not to be an alternative. It is to kind of transform the way funeral services are operated in Greater London and then hopefully beyond. Because I don't think it serves the public for us to be this kind of niche service for only people that happen to find out about us. We need to change the way funeral directors run.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Thank you for all of that, Poppy, and for sharing your story and the origins of Poppies. It's been phenomenal to, well, when I found Poppies, and I think just one fell in love with just like the visuals of it. I was just like, wow, what a breath of fresh air in kind of this industry, and kind of didn't know I could kind of fall in love with the branding of a funeral directory. It was incredible. And I guess obviously as we know, but I'll share with the listeners some of, you know, my own personal connection with your incredible business is obviously when my Poppy died, and how when Poppy was dying and she created her wishes, her wish list at the end of her life, the handful of directories that were on there, and one of them was Poppy's, and it was just kind of a no-brainer. When Poppy died, it was like, it's a no-brainer, we're going for Poppy's. And I just, from someone who, it's an interesting one of both being like a colleague with you in the space of death, dying and grief, and then also being and walking alongside Poppy's family and using your services. And just as I've said with you off air many a times, just the care that your team and you all provided for us during that time has just been absolutely priceless. Just from my own, like when my mum died, I wasn't quite involved with the funeral planning. My brother kind of took the charge on that, so I'd never really had quite close experience of what it is like to, you know, be in contact with funeral directories and what you do at the end of somebody's life. And just yourself and your team just made every part of this painful experience so gentle, so easy, so thought through. And, you know, not only from me, but from Poppy's family, we're just of the utmost thanks to you all. And it's just completely opened up my eyes of just like, wow, there are incredible businesses like yours that are changing the way and how and the options that we have when a loved one dies. And so it's just incredible. So a personal, as I've said to you before, a thank you anyway, but here on the podcast, giving you a thanks and your flowers, because like I said, you and your team made a very painful time very beautiful, because you gave us options and you held us through that experience. And we felt loved from the moment when Poppy died, when your team came in and helped us, from to the very end of her funeral arrangements. We just were so grateful. And I know, speaking on Poppy's family, very, very grateful for your services. I wanted to ask, how do, from someone, even I'm thinking now and I'm laughing because I'm thinking back to that day, 29th of September, and when I called your line and I was just like to your colleague, I don't know what to do, but my friend is dying and I'm trying to just get things sorted for when she dies. And it was a really sobering moment because I really thought, oh my God, I really know nothing. I really know nothing about this. So Poppy, if there is a way that we could go through of talking about what are the steps to organising a funeral, perhaps from death, or even if there is something prior to the death of a loved one, like how I did, I knew the imminent of Poppy's death and thought, if I can do something right now to just relieve a bit of the headache, then let me do that. So if we could start, perhaps maybe if a loved one is dying and their death is imminent, what are some of the processes people can do? Because I know there are listeners who are listening who are anticipating a loved one dying, and this could be really helpful.
It's such a good question. And it feels like a sort of life skill that we all are missing. And I think it would be so helpful in our families, in our communities, in our friendship groups, if there were people who felt able to do the kind of thing that you did, which I think still feels quite taboo. I'm always thinking about, because I guess from my point of view, I feel like, why don't people want to make these plans so that when the death happens, there's a smooth handover, I guess, you know, that they know who to expect and what to expect. Mm. And it's good for me to remember how hard people find this discussion at all. And I remember a woman who called once, and she was calling from her house, and she said, you know, my dad is dying in the room next door, and I just feel so bad for calling when before he's died, because I feel somehow like I'm jinxing him or being disrespectful to him. Mm. And it's our job at Poppy's, and it's something I spend a lot of time doing, to say, like, it's the wisest thing and it's the most thoughtful thing. But it's just to acknowledge that I know people find this really, really hard. And that's very natural. And to say, if for whatever reason you aren't able to make these plans, we are always here. Like, funeral directors are always here for that call in the middle of the night, you know, so that doesn't mean you've failed. That is the reality for most people. But if you have the time and the ability, or a really supportive advocate in your group, because I think that's an interesting point, you know, that you made the call, and I think in every community there is someone who probably has those skills and has that, whose mind is in that place. It doesn't have to be the parent or the child or the partner. You know, it could be a really bullish friend, can be very well placed to kind of make this call. Mm. And I think what you want to start thinking about is, I think there's two things. One is like the really practical logistical stuff. So if someone is going to die at home, then what will happen in the hours after they die is, if the death was expected, which is what happens most of the time, a doctor will come and verify the death. So you normally, what happens is you call your GP's practice, and your GP or another GP will come and verify the death. It can be other people, but that's mostly what happens. And normally then what happens is the GP will say, you know, have you spoken to a funeral director? At which point you may have called a funeral director, you may not have done. And then normally what happens is you will call a funeral director who'll come and collect the person who's died and take them back to their mortuary where they should be cared for very well. A few things happen often. So often people haven't had this discussion or haven't done this thinking and therefore are like furiously searching Google at 3 a.m. on a Sunday morning, which is another reason why it can be really good to have these phone calls ahead of time, so that when you call, you know what's going to happen next, you know who you're going to speak to, and you know what the care that's going to be provided is like. When you die in a hospital or a hospice, it's more normal that those places will have an on-site mortuary. So normally what would happen then is the person who died would be moved to the hospital mortuary, and then in the day or two after the death, the bereavement teams in those places would encourage you to start making plans and choosing a funeral director and thinking about what next. So I think that's the first sort of logistical piece, which is where is the person sort of most likely to die? And in the hours and days after the death, what will I physically need to do? Underpinning that, perhaps more importantly, is like, what would I like to do? And what do we as a community or as a family need? So I've been really privileged to have really different experiences here. So the thing I always want to tell people is, once someone has died, there is no rush. You don't have to move their body. So for example, if you've been caring for someone at home and you want to keep them at home, you absolutely can. And there's no time limit on how long for. You don't need to make a decision. So if we are working with people who want to keep the person who died at home, it's not like, well, you've made your decision, you're going to have to do everything. It's very much like, look, let's just check in with each other every day. So this is how to keep the person cool at home. This is how to care for them well at home. If you've been caring for someone who's been ill at home, it's not harder to care for them after they've died. You know, it's easier, I would say. Mm. And it can be a really beautiful way. Mm. So, for example, lots of people want to come and see the person who's died. And my sense is like, it's probably nicer to do that in their own bed or in their own home in the days after the death than it is. I mean, we have a really lovely friends and family room at Poppy's and people are very welcome and we facilitate all sorts of things, but that it doesn't have to be with us. You know, you can just keep the person at home. And then the other side, I remember going to collect a lovely woman who died at home and she had four kids. They were teenagers. And I remember saying to them when they called, you know, there's no rush. Like, we can come now, but also if you want more time with her. And they were just so exhausted. You know, I think she had been dying for a very long time and they were on their knees. And there was something really psychological about of this period of time ending. And they wanted us to come now, you know, because they just wanted to climb into bed that night and sleep the deepest sleep. And so, again, that's why it's really good to have, whether it be palliative care nurses or spiritual leaders around you or friends or family, you know, if you can try and find those people who are kind of opening those conversations up to say, everybody's different, what do you need? People's needs tend to be very, very, very different.
You bring up a great point talking about, yeah, advocacy, because I think through a lot of this and when organising a funeral and from the time of when somebody's died all the way through to the, you know, the funeral and celebration of life, it is about sometimes, yeah, having somebody in your corner to advocate. And kind of when my puppy died and around that time, I kind of put, yeah, I'm going to be the advocate for it. But like that family that you just mentioned there, of sometimes you just need someone to kind of just steer the ship and be like, look, these are the options and you can just choose. So of saying, you know, if you want to spend time more with mum and actually someone to be able to say, you know, and it is okay if you do want us to take her as well, because, you know, also of, even that itself actually begs a whole another question of kind of feeling potentially, you know, the pressures when there is so many options of, you know, if you can keep your loved one at home or you can spend time with them, when and how do you say take them away? And that's a big thing, because, you know, maybe there might be parts of you that is like, oh, well, if I say actually I'm done with having, I can't do this, because knowing that they are in just the room across the hall, it's agony. But asking someone to come and like take them away feels really like rude and it might feel just harsh. But actually for someone to say, that's okay, like, you know, if you want more time or not, it's okay that there are options. What was so great when talking to your colleague on the phone that day was the, I thought I knew how many options there were when somebody dies, but I didn't know the limitations on it. So even in my own mind, I thought, oh no, that's too much to ask for, even though it was in Poppy's wishes. And thinking, I remember Poppy's mum asked and said, you know, after she dies, I want us to move her body to a place where we can have a vigil. And I remember it was a Friday afternoon and time was ticking. And I was thinking, oh my God, by the time it hits 5 o'clock, we're kind of in the no man's land of like, shit, the registries, everything like that. And when I said to your colleague on the phone and I said, you know, this is what we want to move her here. And I remember thinking it with a tinge of like, if it's not too much. And she was like, yeah, we can organize that. And I was like, wow, it's the exploration of the options. And everything that was being passed from the family to me to ask was never too much. And what that enabled me was to give me the confidence to continue advocating for Poppy and for the family. So even, you know, for the most, bold deal of friends and kind of, I kind of came and I was like, yeah, we're doing boom, 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 this is that. If you're met with like wall after wall after wall, maybe from a bit more of like a stiff upper lip funeral directory, even the most bold of advocates will still feel like, oh my God, I'm just coming up against wall. But with Poppy's, what you were able to enable me was that confidence to go, yeah, we're going to do this and we're going to work together. And so advocacy and having that, whether that's a family member, somebody on the outside to advocate, is amazing. But also having incredible businesses like Poppy's that are advocating for the advocate is incredible. Yeah.
I love everything you're saying, and it brings me much pleasure. So thank you. It's lovely to hear about your experience. A couple of things come up in my mind. The first thing is, like, when did the dead person become the owner? Like, when did the owner of the dead person become the funeral director? Right. So it's like, how have we in our society created a situation where the person who's died isn't yours anymore, and you are kind of asking permission to do things with that person that's right for them, and asking, and that is how it is, you know. And maybe like healthcare is a poor run-up, because so often in healthcare, you know, for lots of reasons that I completely understand, you know, it can feel sometimes a bit like, please, you know, please can I have what's right for me, and fingers crossed I get it. And so maybe that gets us in that mindset of like not feeling empowered. And there are lots of parallels. I'm really interested in how this stuff parallels with birth as well, because I think there are lots of parallels. And the birth movement has taken birth to fascinating new places, and there's still so much work to be done. So I think that's a really core thing for us. It's like, the person who's died is your person. They're not our person. There, of course, are practical logistical limits on how we can support you, and we want to be really straightforward about those, because we never want to promise something that we can't deliver. And we try and be really adult about that, you know, that we'll lead with those kind of boundaries, so that we, because quite understandably, I've been like this, you know, when one is in crisis, one's mind can be all over the place. And we have to be quite sort of grounded in the face of what is often on the family or the client side, quite fast shifting priorities, you know, something that can feel really important half an hour later is like, actually, we don't want that anymore. You know, so we have to be like these sort of clear anchors. But the point is, like, your priorities are our priorities. So the family and the advocate and the client should feel like we are hauling in the same direction, for sure. They should not feel like they're coming to us, you know, sort of begging for basic care and treatment. And I do think, yeah, the sector hasn't done a great job of setting up a very collaborative dynamic. But I think, but that second point that I wanted to raise too, which is, it's very normal for your priorities to be shifting, right? So you might have planned something based on what you thought you'd need, and then actually when the time comes, you realize that's not at all what you need. And again, I think if the first bit is about advocacy and collaboration, I think the second piece is about no judgment, you know. So my experience of a family knowing when it's time for the person to be collected from home is actually, it's quite intuitive. And when that time comes, there is a genuine sense of like, we've had the time we needed, and it's time to say goodbye. And that time can be very emotional. You know, often it's the last time someone's leaving their house. You know, it's the last time they're leaving the threshold, really practical things like their body may still be warm and they'll never be warm again, you know, because the body will, even without refrigeration, drop to room temperature, which feels very cool. So it's not to underestimate the significance of that moment, but that is really, that can be a really good moment between a good funeral director and a client, where you've got this really honest kind of intuitive relationship where they actually do know when it's time. And then we can come in and again, making sure that collection is done beautifully so that you, it doesn't feel like someone's being like removed or taken away. You know, it's a moment of someone going into a space of sort of great care.
That is a perfect segue, I think, into talking about endings and the importance of endings and kind of how I think as a society and specifically in British culture, I think we're just, the whole thing with closure or endings, we're really not well versed in it. But before I segue into that, of to talking about how what you touched on there of the, when you can be so fixated on, well, this is what we need to do and I must honour it, specifically if that is potentially in, you know, the wishes of a loved one, and that actually with the right directory, they will, of course, explore that with you and not put up loads of walls and barriers like Poppy's. So, you know, you broke down the barriers with us all. But I remember so distinctly, I remember the day Poppy died, and I'll allude much to my experience of it because I've got a direct experience with your wonderful services, but I remember everything you're saying. I've got so many amazing points to add on to it because like I'm a living testimony of it. But I remember the day she died, the original plan was to move her to a family friend's home that evening. And I remember that was one of my, oh, please, like if that can happen. And I remember thinking, that's a lot to do. And there was never a time when it was, no, it was, your team just so eloquently and thoroughly explained, there would be barriers here, but we can explore. And it was just incredible. But what that was allowed us to do, and when I relayed that information to the family, what we were so tunnel visioned on was getting her out of the hospital. We didn't want her in a mortuary, out and into this family friend's home. But actually, once we had a discussion and realizing that actually, if she was to go to one of your directories and your team would be able to provide her with some care, come over the weekend to let her come into your care by the Monday, we just take that weekend just to process what we have gone through. And so having that, whereas I think in the beginning, if we were, say, another directory was like, no, that can't happen, we're having her for the weekend and you'll have her on Monday, we would have had our guard up and like, no, no, this is happening now. But because we were working as a team, there was never any, actually, no, it was, let's explore that. This is what the steps we might have to explore to get to that point. And after we did that, it was just sitting back and going, okay, we're not saying no, but there could be some hurdles. And actually, yeah, could we do if this weekend just to sit and process that Poppy has died and let her have some care, let her have some rest and be tended to. And on Monday, and it was, even the family saying now, it was the best decision to just go, yeah, let's just hold off on that. So yeah, when you're working in collaboration, it's just incredible. But to segue into what you're talking about, endings and working collectively together of when it feels that natural, if somebody has died at home, or of when it's almost like there was times when I'm thinking too of that when Poppy died and when your team came in. I remember it was almost like there was just no words needed between myself and the team. It's almost like they just knew because we spent time with her and they were there with us as we were spending time, but not in a way of like, come on now. There was nothing of that. It was just this very natural way of like they could just read the room very clearly of knowing we were done there. We were done and we were ready to pass her over to Poppy's. And I think that's just an incredible skill, an incredible compassion. And it was incredible. It was almost like just had to look at them and they were like, okay. And they just knew.
But tuning in, you know, which is something I guess in a set, quite often I get asked like, oh, do you all use loads of black humour? And it's like, no, because that's just distracting yourself from repressing the reality of our work, which is beautiful and hard. And I think because the parallel experience, when I spent some time with the funeral director before I set up Poppies to get some experience, one of the kind of standard things that funeral directors do is they will go into the house and they will say to the family, you may want to wait in the kitchen because like this might be a bit undignified. And then they go upstairs with a stretcher and the person is taken out, you know, zipped up and gone. And I get it. You know, it's like they're scared something might go wrong. They're scared there might be some kind of wild emotion. I remember a guy at this company, when I spoke to him, he said, you know, I'm often told like not to talk when I'm in that environment. But I guess because it's like there's a risk he might say something stupid. And yeah, I think it builds confidence in our team, right? When you, like a really good midwife or a really good teacher or a really good social worker or any of those people who work kind of on the front line of anything, or a paramedic, it's like you're tuning in. And then having supported many, many people, you do start to recognise the signs of they look knackered. Yeah. You know, they're ready to say goodbye versus I think she might need like one last kiss.
To touch back on what you were just saying about, yeah, as a worker and to talk about the workers who were there for Poppy and the day she died, of course, you know, that poor guy who said, you know, I was told not to talk and stuff. How will they learn to navigate dealing with family through this? And one thing, I was so appreciative of the two amazing ladies. I can see them in my eyes right now and I'll never forget their faces. And just one, your uniforms as well are gorgeous. I was just, it was so nice just to see these two women walking in these lovely pale pink polos. I was just like, oh my God, it doesn't feel like the Grim Reaper is coming into the room, because it almost did feel like, oh, like there was, when the nurse came and said, oh, they have arrived, I remember feeling this almost like protection of wanting to literally cover Poppy's body and be like, no, you can't take her. But as soon as they came in, just their energy was like, take your time. We can stay here until you're ready. And I remember, you know, they offered, you know, if you want to be in the room or not, and we said we'll stay. And the most beautiful part, and I probably get emotional talking about this, was when they asked, would you like to help us? And I remember I looked at Poppy's mum's friend was in the room with me. So it was like two friends of these two, of Poppy's mum in the room. We were like the friends who were like sucking it up and being like, we're doing this, we're supporting the family. And we looked at each other and we were like, I'd never been asked. I didn't know how we could help. And I just went, yeah, I think I remember I said, how? And they said, you can just help her however you want to, if you want to hold her body. And I remember Hannah was at the top with her head and I was at her feet. And it was possibly one of the most sacred things I ever did. And I'm really glad I got that. But that was off the intuition of your incredible team to say, you know, we were kind of in the corner watching, and it was almost like she saw like this is integral to this, and she invited us into that, didn't diminish, she invited us into that. And it still is one of the most proud and honorable things I was ever able to do for Poppy in these last moments spent of time of her life and being with her. And I just think it was incredible compassion and empathy. And so again, just another example of when you work with the families and the friends of them and you include them in every step of the way, how paramount that is. And when I've told some people about that, they think, oh, is that not really scarring? And I'm like, no, because I got to do something for my friend. I got to still honour her life and still care for her, even at the very end. And I feel very grateful for that. And so I'm, as you know, I'm very grateful for you, your team, and just your services.
It's, I mean, I can't tell you how lovely it is for me to hear, you know, I guess we as a society maybe misunderstand what funeral directors do, because it's like, it sounds like we direct a funeral, which is an event on a day that might last an hour or half an hour. And that is a huge part of what we do. But really, a lot of the power of what we do happens with probably a smaller group of people. You know, there are a series of opportunities for people to have experiences, and we'd never force them on anyone. You know, lots of people in my family are kind of buttoned up and wouldn't want lots of the things that we do at Poppy's. And that's okay too. We're really proud to work for everyone. But yeah, the thing you're describing is again that thing of like, perhaps we're just nudging people and reminding them that this is their experience, it's not ours, which we can do it for you. You know, we'll do it all for you, but don't accidentally miss out on something that might be quite special and which like 150 years ago would have been completely standard, you know. And again, I think there are loads of good parallels with birth. If I think about when I had my kids, the really skilled midwives that would just sort of nudge my husband forward and be like, why don't you help guide the baby's head out or something, you know, and he's just like, what? But there's something, there's these moments that we've outsourced, and it's okay to outsource them, but don't outsource them by mistake.
So I love the comparison of talking, yeah, about in birth and in death, of kind of as in the beginning you spoke about of, yeah, the movement of the birth movement and kind of how, you know, very strongly there is real empowerment, encouragement to be involved, you know, whoever is involved, whether that is for, you know, the mother having the baby or, yeah, the birthing partners to really from beginning to end to be part of it all. But somehow on the other end of the bookend of life, there's still this, oh no, and just hand that over, and we don't get involved in there, we get people to come in and do that. And I think that's yet again the perfect segue to talk about endings of, my gosh, how bad are we at talking about end? I think in, you know, in death and talking and in bereavement, but also just as a whole in life. And that's why when, you know, my perspective on funerals since Poppy's death specifically has just been completely pivoted, because my mum's funeral and the, you know, the experience that we had of funeral directories around that time was very just very standard traditional. But actually Poppy's just absolutely broke the mold. It was, oh, you can do that at a funeral, we can have that. And how I think any single person who was involved in Poppy's funeral and attended it understood the ritualism of this and how important it was. I think if we weren't able to have had that, and then, you know, it begs the question and the experience for those who haven't been able to have, you know, maybe not as like elaborate even as Poppy's, because Poppy's really was like a one-off, like all funerals afterwards, I'm like, my gosh, this is boring.
Bit average, yeah.
Because she just broke the mold. So, but how important, yeah, rituals are and endings are. So I wanted to ask you, Poppy, of what are endings to you and their importance, and obviously throughout your work and seeing and working with so many families, of how and why can we be better at with endings, and what are their integralness to our social, you know, contracts in a way?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a book in this. I'm like a bit old, you know, like all these words. Ghosting, right, is a word that like wasn't around when I was dating, but ghosting to me is fascinating, because it feels to me like there are so many moments in our lives where we have like lost the ability to acknowledge an end, and we would rather pretend it wasn't happening and hide, as if in doing that we've somehow protected ourselves from the ending. And so I guess what working with death and funerals has taught me is the endings happen whether you like it or not. You know, autumn and winter come, you know, there's no like living permanently in spring and summer. That is not an option. You can acknowledge it and you can go with it, or you can fight it and pretend it's not there. And I don't see any good happening from that lack of acknowledgement. And obviously COVID was a really big bit of this, because there were loads of people who didn't get to have endings around funerals, whether they wanted to or not. And, you know, really sad. I remember where Poppy's is based in a cemetery, or our main headquarters is in Tooting, and there was a burial happening within the cemetery, and, you know, there were like 7 people allowed in or 10 people allowed in, and there were about 100 people lined up outside the railings, just like faces pressed against the railings, trying to get as close to this funeral as they could. And I've got people in my own life who missed endings around COVID, and because they're not religious, or because they don't, you know, because we don't really have a sort of secular structure for ritual, they're sort of slightly floating now. I think they know they need to do something, but they don't have a framework now that the body isn't here. And something I've learned a lot about over the last few years, I think, is like it's never too late to have a ritual. And also that ritual is a word that terrifies people. I think they immediately think, for people who are not spiritual, ritual sounds like altars and kind of incense and things that, you know, lots of kind of secular atheist people find unnerving. Whereas a ritual can simply be, you know, gathering 4 people in your living room with a cup of tea and putting a photo on a table and just talking about that person consciously for an hour. you know, a ritual can be taking a weekly walk and listening to the music they always loved. As long as it's intentional and as long as it's feeding you, you know, those are ways of kind of saying goodbye. And lots of people have had funerals, big funerals with hundreds of people, and not been served by them. You know, I'm sure we've all been to funerals where it felt like a bit of a performance and you came away feeling like, I don't know who that was for because it wasn't for me. You know, and sometimes you need a ritual after the funeral because you actually need to get the things you need to get. So I think funerals and death can teach us a lot about how we navigate all endings, you know, whether that be the phases of our life or relationships or things at work or anything. And I notice that. I notice how much I want to create ritual for myself and the people I love around endings that I think, you know, it's like people leaving a job and just being like, I don't really want a goodbye party. You know, I'm just going to kind of creep out the back door. And you think, I get it. It's not easy. But I think you might be creating problems for yourself in the future.
To that point as well, people thinking the only endings that we should really solidly mark are things like death and somebody dying. But actually, the endings in our life, like relationships, like career paths, like leaving a family home, like there is a pain in that of like leaving, potentially a family home that you have grown up for. If you, like maybe if you're going to university or, you're moving out for the first time, or feeling that pain of that. And I think, I love what you said of hearing about of flipping the word ritual on its head. If you aren't that way inclined, when you hear the word ritual, you think of altars, candles, incense, saging and all that stuff. You think, that's not for me. But actually making the word ritual work for you. So if it is maybe having a cup of tea, if it is, you know, you're leaving your family home, having one little glass before you go, you know, ritual. I love the kind of the tearing apart of the word ritual and people making it for themselves, because goodbyes are important. And like you said of, you know, going to, you know, speaking in terms of funerals, of when an ending has not at its very core, you know, got the person who we are saying goodbye to at it. And you do come away thinking, well, actually, I haven't been able to maybe, I don't want to say closure, because I feel like with grief, there's no closure, but to have that solid ending of that where you just go, what the hell was that all about? Whereas when it is so person-centered, and what is bringing you together and what you want to memorialize and honor is always at the center of what you're doing, you walk away from these things of, we did that, and we gave them the ending and of their storybook, how they would have wanted it. Like with Poppy's funeral, I don't think there is one regret at all. We, you know, it was her day through and through, and we are all very fortunate that we actually, I remember leaving Poppy's funeral. I mean, it was a whole party. It was at Bush Hall. And I was actually remarking the other day, because I don't know if you may have seen online, but Bush Hall is in quite of a crisis at the moment. It needs funding, as a lot of venues do in music venues. And it was on the news and they were saying, you know, Bush Hall is a place where the likes of Adele, Alicia Keys, all these amazing artists. And I looked at my partner and I said, of course, Poppy had her wake at Bush Hall, where Alicia Keys, Adele, Amy Winehouse performed. Like, obviously.
Another headliner.
Yeah, exactly. Literally another headline. And I remember at the end, just full of tears, and my head was pounding this day. But I remember I thought, I need to go home. Like I could not see, my head was pounding. But I remember feeling, I actually don't want to leave here, because this has been such an amazing ritual day, a celebration of her life. And I remember, it's almost like I still have this gravital pull to Bush Hall and just that experience. But like I said earlier, Poppy's funeral has broken the mold for me of what endings and funerals looks like. And that the more we talk about it, and actually with our loved ones who are dying and facing death, or even just not, just talking about the end of our lives and living, and what we would want at that, what is our focus, what is in our, you know, moral compasses, that when it comes to these days, there can be joy. I look back to Poppy's funeral with this weird undertone of joy, because we were together as a community and we knew this ending was done right by her.
You were, and you, I mean, I my sense is when a funeral is done well, you are reveling in their spirit. You are bathing in the wonder of them. And I don't know why, you know, the words you used when you described your experience of supporting Poppy when we came to collect her was sacred was one and honouring was another. And it's like, it should be all of those things. It should be, you should come away feeling like full up. And I think one of the things I notice even with our clients is the number of times they'll say things like, it was weirdly inspiring, or like, I know you shouldn't say this, but I really enjoyed the day. You know, I don't know if that's like a British thing or Western thing or what it is, but it's like, yes, that's the whole point. You know, it's not like a process to be dragged through. Mm-hmm. It's meant to feed you. Even if what you're being fed is, you know, some of the situations we support people in are deeply traumatic and they're not celebrations of life because the circumstances are so appalling and grim. But even then, like, something very important is happening in that room. There is an acknowledgement of the pain. There is an acknowledgement of the family's need for support in the community. You know, I think a funeral, if anything, is a moment where the community is forced to look at the family's pain and there is a reckoning of, like, we need to support you. You know, just like in a wedding, I think about this a lot. You know, I got married in the days where, like, my generation all got married. And I know, like, younger generations are making much more progressive choices, and good on you all. but I remember that bit in the wedding ceremony where it's like, you know, basically, does the whole community promise to support this couple? And that's what we should be doing at funerals. It's like, does this community promise to support this family, not just through the funeral, but like the weeks and the months and the years until it's your turn when you'll need support? So they can be very powerful. They should be very powerful.
You know, Poppy, I cannot believe you've just brought that up, because that's actually giving me goosebumps. Poppy, in her wedding video, says that exact same thing. She? There's a clip of her. Oh, God. She literally says... She said, I miss the days when in weddings people would say, you promised to support us. Mm. And she literally goes, so she's through teary eyes as well. And she's like, do you promise to support us and be our community? And they're like, yes, yes. And so, yeah, it is. That is what, you know, in the joyous moments of our life, you know, we ask our communities to come and support us in our love, in our marriages. And also, yeah, of... on these goodbyes and when somebody dies, of, I remember as well Poppy's mum saying, you know, don't be scared of our grief. And we kind of looked at it and we vowed, we're like, we won't be, we will show up for it. And as much as there is, that's, I think, with the funerals, with the ending, it can be, you know, both a celebration, but also, yes, the honouring of the pain as well. It's not just having a sing and a dance and whatnot and a good time, but also of, we are here in deep mourning and we are making a vow here today to stick together and band together from this day forward. It's almost like a marital promise in some ways. And yeah.
Well, and also, like, for those of us who've been through anything hard, it's like, you, we all know that. We know that friendships and community is forged in the tough times, you know, like, that's true for all of us. You know, that moment where, like, certain friends just sort of like disappear and other friends step up and you're like, okay, I know something now about my community I didn't know before, and I'm safer and I'm stronger and we're more resilient. So I'm not to underestimate the pain and the suffering, but it is a rite of passage of like, oh, we can get through hard things together. That's very reassuring.
We can do hard things together. Mm. I love that saying. To round off Poppy, I want to ask you, what makes Poppies Poppies? And I know when we've spoken before and I've looked at your services, there is something that you offer that is My Funeral Wishes. And I'd love for you to just tell us a bit about that. And yeah, what makes Poppies the incredible funeral directory that it is?
So I'll start with My Funeral Wishes. So that is a free 45-minute consultation that we offer at Tooting or Sheen, which is where we're based, or it can be online or on the phone. And the aim with My Funeral Wishes is it's a conversation where you can plan what you want to happen when you die, very specifically if you like, and or it can just be a very rambling conversation about your hopes and wishes and anxieties and worries. So what we find is that there are people who don't want to sort of buy a funeral plan. They're not looking to kind of buy a financial package. They want to be helped with their thinking, often in families and communities where, you know, other people don't want to have that conversation. So the idea is you come in and you have a chat with us and you go away with sometimes very concrete plans, like, I want to be cremated and I want to have a wool coffin and I don't want to be embalmed and, you know, I want there to be some open mic at the ceremony. And for other people, they might come and just talk about one worry or concern. So my mum has always had this thing of like, she doesn't want to go into a fridge. She just doesn't like the idea of fridges. So I know if she came in, it would just be 45 minutes of like, you know, that's my concern. And how can you help me avoid that? Or it might be like, we don't have any money, or there's going to be lots of children and I'm worried about their experience. So, yeah. You can call Poppies or you can go online and book a session with us. And I think that leads nicely to what makes Poppies Poppies, because we are all about making sure that your experience from beginning to end is held beautifully. So we obviously can't take away the pain of the death, and that's not what our ambition is. But we are here to make sure that you get the support you need to establish what matters to you and then to deliver that. Often all within a time frame of approximately like 5 days. and that's in a sector where services have become very formulaic and where people are kind of pushed to buy things that fit in with what a funeral director thinks a funeral is. So I always compare it to, like, you know, when you go and get a visa from the Indian embassy to go to India, you know, those are two different things. Being processed to get the visa is different from the experience of being in the country. And I hate the idea of people being processed after someone dies. I think it's great. You know, you've cremated the body. That's fantastic. But have you got anything meaningful out of this experience? And at Poppies, we want you to get what is meaningful out of this experience. Again, even if that's like saving £2,000, you know, that's fine with me. We're not going to push you through a emotional experience you don't want to have. But I really want you to get your needs met, whatever they are. And that's, I think, what sets us apart.
Someone, yeah, who has walked alongside a family using their services. I'm a living testimony, so I can only highly recommend your services. You know, for anyone who is listening, who, I mean, I literally just had a bingo moment of thinking something that we could do together. So I'll talk about it afterwards. And perhaps for listener, you might hear something about it afterwards, because I think, you know, even for anyone who is listening who has a loved one who is dying and they are thinking about, you know, what can I do? What are our options? This is obviously great to listen to. But also, I think for anyone who is, you know, we're not dying, but we do think about, I think going through grief, we can only naturally think about, my gosh, yeah, what would I want at the end of my life if there was a scenario where I was terminally ill or even not? What do I want at the end of my life? What do I want my goodbye to be? What is important to me, what is important to gift to my family and loved ones. And so talking about that, you know, I have many people in my DMs sort of saying, I really want to sit and write my death wishes out, but no one will do it with me. And I'm like, leave it with me. We're going to do something. So,
well, I think one really interesting thing is, I think for lots of people, they think, I don't know what I'd want. But when you put down things in front of them, they know what they don't want, right? And for lots of us who've come out of a funeral,
yeah,
that strong visceral sense of like, do not do that with me. And so that one, when we do my funeral wishes, interestingly, that can often be where we start. It's like, I don't want to be embalmed. I don't want money wasted. You know, I don't want religion, or I do want religion, you know. So I think people probably know much more than they think about what they want. And you don't have to be specific. Being too specific can actually be a real burden for people left behind, like trying to, you know, source seven Spanish doves and have them all released, you know, at the moment that Elton John sings like the particular word is actually like not the legacy you want to leave.
A bit too much specificness can, yeah, it's a bit too much. There's some things I've seen, I think, cool, that's just a bit much there. But, oh, Poppy, thank you so much for talking with me today. It's been a total delight. And I just know this episode is definitely going to support, you know, whoever, if they're navigating it now, and maybe just helping them think about what they want at the end of their life. I think there's an amazing book, Dr. Catherine Mannix, you know, with the end in mind. And I always think when we live with the end in mind, it really helps us how we actually want to live. So thank you for your work. Thank you for personally, as always, as I've said to you before, for your work services. It has been a crucial part of my grieving process for Poppy, and so I have an abundance to thank you for. So thank you for joining me today.
It means so much to me to be here and to hear your experiences firsthand. Thank you for sharing them, and thanks for having me.
Thank you.
thank you for tuning in to this week's episode. I appreciate more than you'll ever know your support of the show, and I hope this episode has supported you in one way or another. Spread the good word about the Grief Gang podcast. Tell a friend to tell a friend. Subscribe to the show on your chosen listening platform so you're first to know when a new episode drops. Visit the show notes below to follow the Grief Gang on all social platforms, and pay our website a visit to find further resources and ways to get in contact and work with me. Look after yourself and know that you are never alone. I'll see you soon.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.